Power Records presents...
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of the Power Records podcast, where the action comes alive. I'm one of your hosts, Rob Kelly, and joining me as always is my pal...
Chris Franklin.
Hey, Chris, it's so exciting to be back doing another Power Records podcast. We don't do enough of these.
That's right. Yeah, we don't. We got plenty of Power Records to go through. We should do them more often.
I totally agree. And this episode is even extra special because we have a guest. Very rarely do we have someone come on talking Power Records with us, but this time we do. And it's our pal, Scott X. Hi, Scott.
Hey, Rob. How you doing? It's good to talk to you again so soon. And Chris, it's a wonderful opportunity to talk with you live and in person. We've emailed back and forth a little bit about some projects, and I'm thrilled that we're finally going to get to do something together tonight.
Same here, Scott. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, this is very, very exciting. Scott asked a while back, like a long time ago, like a year ago or something, you said if we ever do Superman, the Superman record, Alien Creatures, that you wanted to be on that record very specifically. And we'll talk about why this one is so beloved to you in a moment. But first, of course, we have to thank our sponsor, which is InStock Trades. This episode of the Power Records podcast is sponsored in part by InStockTrades.com. InStock Trades is your best online source for trades, hardcovers, and other collected editions, all for up to 45% off with free shipping for orders $50 or more. Chris, what do you got?
I have got Catwoman, a celebration of 75 years hardcover. Selena Kyle gets her due in this new collection celebrating her 75-year history. Don't miss the stories that made Catwoman one of Batman's greatest foes and one of comics' most memorable villains. If you got any of these 75-year celebration books or, like, basically the greatest hits of the character, it's kind of the new version of the greatest stories ever told. The retail price on this one was $39.99. You can get it on InStock Trades for $23.19. That's 42% off. That's a great deal on this book.
Yeah, that's a great pick. And I should mention the other record that we're going to be covering is, of course, a Catwoman record, which is the Catwoman's Revenge. So this is a Superman Batman episode, a world's finest Power Records presentation. My pick is I wanted to do something featuring Superman from the Bronze Age, because that's the record we're going to be covering in a moment. And so I picked Superman, The Many Worlds of Krypton, which collects the two World of Krypton miniseries, numbers 1 through 3, 1 through 4, and then Krypton-related tales from Superman's 233, 236, 238, 240, 248, 257, 266, and Superman Family number 182, featuring stories by Dennis O'Neill, Dave Cockrum, our pal Paul Kupperberg, Howard Chaykin, John Byrne, Mike Mignola, Rick Bryant, an amazing lineup of artists and writers talking about stories set either on or around Krypton. The cover artist is the late, great Dick Giordano. The page count is 240. Normal price is $19.99. In-stock trades price is only $11.59. You'd save 42% off. So for these and all their trade paperwork needs, visit InStockTrades.com, and we thank them for their support. All right, Chris, as I said, we're here to talk about Alien Creatures. Before we get to the record in question, Scott, I want to ask you, why did you want to talk about this one so specifically?
The Power Records, Rob, you and I have talked before about video comics, Nickelodeon, and how I love those things. Power Records stands right there with video comics for me. This was sort of the sound of superheroes when I was a kid. I clearly remember laying in front of the record player on the green shag carpet covering the floor of our 1970s dining room and listening to these records. I had several of them, and the one that, well, there's two that I think are my favorites, which you guys actually covered way back, I don't think it was 2013 on Fire and Water, when the Power Records special, are my two favorite. But this one, I think, it's right there in the third one. It was the first book and record set that I had.
And
that is the reason that it really sticks out to me. And, you know, I still have my original copy. I have it right here in front of me.
Cool.
And it looks like it has been through the wars. It was obviously used many, many, many times. I have the original record here that has where both sides say side two on it. And so my mom wrote side one. Yeah, exactly. My mom wrote side one on the one part of it here so that as a kid I knew which one to put in first because you had to flip
thanks,
these
mom.
Records over. You know, it wasn't all on one record. you had to flip the record mid book and the book and record too. So it just, it's, I love this story. I think it's one of those, it's just a very Bronze Age-y tale, as we'll talk about when we talk about the record itself. And it just brings brings back great memories for me.
Awesome. Yeah, it sure is a great record. And so let's get right to it. So without further ado, let's all enjoy Superman in Alien Creatures.
It's a bright midsummer day in Metropolis, and there's not much news fit to televise at Galaxy Communications, where in his office, Clark Kent is monitoring the 12 o'clock news.
Clear and sunny at 12 noon in downtown Metropolis. It's 92 degrees and getting hotter.
Lois Lane, ace reporter for Galaxy Communications, opens Clark's door and looks in.
Clark, I'm off for lunch.
Enjoy it, Lois. I think I'm going to take a nap.
Lois Lane leaves, and Clark lies back in his chair, only to be rudely awakened by...
Galaxy, Clark Kent here.
Dr. Tripper speaking of the Void Observatory.
Yes, Dr. Tripper. What can I do for you?
Well, it seems, Mr. Kent, my telescope is picking up a strange sort of, well, what I can only describe as an electrical storm, which is which is approaching the Earth rapidly. I thought the news media should be advised.
Clark immediately sends for Jimmy Olsen, investigative reporter for the Daily Planet.
Listen, Jimmy, take a ride out to Void Observatory and check out what's happening and let me know immediately. I'll be here.
Meanwhile, Perry White, editor of the Daily Planet, is hosting a luncheon in honor of Superman, which is being held on the 20th floor of the 50-floor Majestic Hotel. But Superman has not yet appeared to take his place of honor. As Jimmy disappears out the door, Clark Kent steps into the closet in his office.
I thought nothing would ever come up to get Lois and Jimmy out of here so I could get to that lunch on time.
And as Clark Kent, now Superman, whizzes out his office window to attend the lunch in his honor, Jimmy Olsen drives rapidly along a winding mountain road on his way to Void Observatory, site of the most powerful telescope in the world.
Wouldn't you know, I'd have to be the one to drive all the way out here in this heat. Woof! It must be 100 degrees in the shade, no rain in sight.
Jimmy's car pulls up to Void Observatory. He walks up to the lab and... As Jimmy waits for the door of the Void Observatory to open, he happens to glance up at the sky, where he notices a small dark cloud way, way up, far above the highest mountaintop.
Looks like storm clouds are gathering.
The immense door finally opens, and Dr. Tripper beckons Jimmy inside.
You must be from the news media. Now, your credentials, please.
Investigative reporter, Galaxy Communications.
Well, come in then. Come in. Come on.
Jimmy steps inside the room and is immediately taken aback by the sight of the gigantic telescope which occupies the whole observatory.
Wow, Doctor. That thing's a monster. You ought to be able to see a storm coming up a million miles away.
Yes, we can. We can. And there is a storm coming up. But I've never sighted anything like this one before. Here, let me explain this.
Meanwhile, back in Metropolis, Lois Lane sits at the counter of the Greenall drugstore where she's finishing her lunch. A pineapple ice cream soda. And at the Majestic...
And so, Superman, although absolutely nothing has happened to disturb the citizens of Metropolis for some time now, and no one has needed your services, we want you to know we greatly appreciate all that you've done for us in the past.
As Perry presents Superman with a plaque from the Daily Planet, one of the guests looks out the window.
Hey, what's that?
What's going on here?
It's hailing!
It's hailing silver bullets!
As the luncheon guests mill around the room, holes appear in the ceiling. And silver bullets streak through the room to the floor below. Panic!
Help! Superman! Help!
Now, I'd better go pick up Lois at Galaxy and get out to Void Observatory fast.
At the same time, caught outside in the street on her way back to work, Lois Lane dodges silver bullets. She runs toward the empty Galaxy offices and rushes into Clark Kent's office.
Clark?
Where she finds only a television set going.
Reports from Moscow indicate a catastrophe has occurred. Since 6 o'clock this morning, we haven't heard a word. SOS, SOS, alien creatures are landing. Alien creatures are landing.
Lois stands, paralyzed, before the television set. Superman zooms through the window and comes to a screeching halt beside her.
Lois!
Superman! What is it? What's happening?
I don't know, Lois, but I have a hunch that Void Observatory is the place to find out. Let's go.
But Superman, where's Clark? I left him right here at his desk.
We'll have to look for Clark later. No time now.
And Superman and Lois are on their way to the observatory, where...
So you see, Jimmy, we have been in constant radio communication with particles of what seemed to be an electrical storm. But we have had no way of interpreting the signals we've been receiving. Now, our next step...
Wait a minute, Dr. Tripper. Look, it's raining silver bullets. Oh, what's going on? They seem to be evaporating everything in their path.
Oh, good grief. I'm sure that... Well, I hope they're friendly.
Superman and Lois Lane appear through the open roof of the observatory and drop to the floor beside Jimmy and Dr. Tripper.
Superman, Superman, thank goodness you've come. But what are we going to do? I'm sure these alien creatures are friendly, but they're unwittingly destroying us, and we have no way of communicating with them.
Superman, you've got to do something.
If we can't talk to them, then we must communicate without words. ESP, thought transference, it's the only way. Everyone, concentrate.
With all the superhuman power at his disposal, Superman sets his great mind in gear to send out a message to these alien creatures who, in landing on the planet Earth, can only, albeit unintentionally, destroy it. Haltingly, Superman speaks.
They say they've had to leave their planet Zoink. Because it has become uninhabitable. They say that the planet Earth is a good place for them.
Once again, Superman focuses his mind power on the incredible problem of communicating with creatures who speak no language known to man.
Help me, everyone. Help me to explain.
And the birds, the trees, the Earth people, the fish... The flowers cry out.
To each it's all. To all it's space. Give the world back to the world. Please, friends, give the world back to the world.
Alien creatures, you will destroy our life on the planet Earth if you land. Alien creatures, you are destroying us.
Silence.
Superman. They've stopped falling. Look, they're hovering just off the ground. They don't look like silver bullets. They're like beautiful silver hummingbirds. Oh, Superman, where will they go if they can't stay here?
Yes, Lois, that's what they're saying, too.
His incredible vision, already a trillion times sharper than that of any ordinary being, Superman steps up beside the giant Void telescope. And with no need of the aid of the most powerful telescope known to man, Superman gazes farther out into the universe than any human has ever dared or even tried to see.
Yes. Aha. There it is. A planet in the exact same orbital relationship to its sun as Zoink and the Earth are to their suns. But in an entirely different solar system, of course, from ours and theirs. Our radio waves have confused these little creatures and thrown them off their course.
Once again, Superman concentrates. Like a laser, his mind beams the exact course they must take to the silver creatures who wait, shivering, just a foot above the Earth's surface. Then, like a plague of locusts, the alien creatures rise up, up into the sky, up until they become, once again, a tiny, tiny dark cloud above the highest mountaintop, and then, finally, can be seen no more.
You did it, Superman. You saved us. And you saved them, too.
Once again, we have you to thank, Superman, for saving the world from total destruction.
Oh, my goodness. Clark, we've got to get back to Metropolis and find him.
All right, Lois. You drive back with Jimmy. I'll scout around and see if I can catch sight of him.
Back at Galaxy Communications a few hours later.
Clark, thank goodness you're all right. I was so worried. Where have you been?
Well, actually, Lois, I was under the desk when you and Superman were here, but I was too terrified of getting hit by a silver bullet to come out and let you know I was here. What happened?
I sure wish it would rain.
And that was Superman Alien Creatures. Scott, like, now we've all heard it. Again, like, tell us about it. Why do you love this thing so much?
You know, part of it, I think, is, like I said, it's just the nostalgia factor. I listened to this thing 1,000 times, but I also think it's just a really good representation of Superman in the Bronze Age. To me, this one could have fit right into a comic book. It had the Kurt Swan interiors on the art, and I think it, you know, and I know Chris, your thoughts on Kurt Swan. I actually love Kurt Swan. I think, how do I want to say this? I think there are certainly deficiencies in his art if you look at it from a modern eye, but I think it really depicted the sensibilities of the Bronze Age, and it fit right into the comics. Kurt Swan was doing the drawing for Action Comics and Superman at the time. But the story itself, I actually liked it too. Although it did have sort of that weird ESP thing going on where Superman uses his super ESP powers to connect with all life on the planet. And I'm not exactly sure where that came from.
Who directed this? Richard Lester? What's going on?
Yeah, exactly. He also threw a giant S on the alien creatures. That was in the outtakes, but I don't know. But I just like the idea of it, I guess. And I had another one of the crazy scientists in there that seemed to be in all these records. We had Weatherspoon's Catalyst was another crazy scientist. Mm-hmm. This one, he didn't appear so much in this one. But it was also that era where Superman, Clark Kent, was working for WGBS instead of the Daily Planet. But we got a nod to Perry White, who, of course, was giving Superman an award during the book, which always seemed to happen also in the Bronze Age of Superman comics. But so I don't know. I guess, like I said, it's mostly nostalgia, but I did just like the story overall.
Chris, what about you? What do you think of this one?
When I was listening to this one, I don't think I listened to this one. I never listened to this one as a kid. When you put the blog up, I think it was the first time I listened to this one. But this time it struck me, it's as if Grant Morrison wrote an episode of the Adventures of Superman TV show.
what a mind F that would be, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, because you got all the elements here. It's like the real reliance on the Daily Planet staff. I mean, because really Lois, I mean, other than Superman not wanting Lois to be endangered by falling, you know, silver bullets, which I don't know why somebody didn't, you know, question the Lone Ranger about all this, but Lois is kind of in this story just because, well, it's a Superman record and Lois needs to be in the story. But I will say that I don't know if Kurt Swan ever drew a more attractive Lois than she is depicted in this comic. It's something about, I guess it's showing how hot it is in Metropolis, but she's got her hair up and the little, you know, the hair's coming down around her ears. It's like, you know, not to sound like our buddy Shag, but Lois is hot in this story.
You know,
I did have to laugh to, like you said, to put Lois in there so Superman had someone to save, because as soon as the so-called silver bullet started falling and they thought the Earth was under attack, Superman right away goes to pick up Lois before he goes to the observatory to save the world. So Lois was more important than saving the world, apparently, too.
Right. Well, that tracks with some other Superman stories we're on.
Absolutely. and she was looking good. So, you know,
she was looking very good. Yes, yes. I do kind of think it's funny, too, that Clark is, even though he's, like you said, he's working for WGBS, but he sure is bossing around the Daily Planet staff an awful lot when he's not the editor. He's like sending Jimmy on assignment. You know, it's like, wait a minute. Is Clark really Jimmy's manager, boss, superior? What? You know?
I had the same thing written in my notes. Like, what exactly is his role? It says at the beginning he's monitoring the news, but on the TV. But he is the news TV station. He's just sitting in there watching their own program. It seems strange.
Right. Yeah. But I did enjoy it. I mean, the ESP thing. It's, you know, all the TV shows we watched as a kid in the 70s. ESP was a plot line on, I think it was a plot line on The Odd Couple at some point, you know, I mean, it's like every TV show, Good Times, you know, there was an ESP story. So, I mean, it makes sense in the 70s that Superman would use super ESP powers. And I like the, you know, I wonder if Kurt Swan, when he was drawing it, was like, wait a minute, I got to draw a beam coming out of Superman's head. Wait a minute. That doesn't, it's like, I don't think that's one of his powers. Oh, well, you know, I'm getting more money than I normally do for a monthly book because it's, you know, merchandising money. So I'll do it. You know, maybe.
I'm sure that's what, yeah, it's whatever. The check clears either way. It's fine.
Right.
I actually had in my notes that I thought Lois did look particularly fetching in this Power Record. And then I was like, should I say that? I don't know. But now you've opened the gates. You've opened the floodgates. So thank you, Chris. Yeah, she looks really quite nice in her. Again, and maybe because it's hot out and the outfit is just a little more skimpy or whatever. But I had this one as a kid. I don't know if I really paid attention to such things. I never thought of Lois as particularly kind of attractive, really, just as a kid. I guess because she seems like such a nag a lot of the time. But here she looks really quite good. And so I kind of get that Superman's like, oh, let me go lock this down first before I start worrying about the planet Earth. You know, right at the top of the record, when they're talking, when Lois and Clark are talking at the very beginning, and he says, I'm going to go take a nap. Now, like, that seems to happen a lot in these Superman 70s, 80s adventures. There's an episode of the Challenge of the Super Friends where Clark is asleep at his desk. I'm like, was that a thing you could do in the 70s? Could you just nap in the middle of the day? I mean, if I took a nap in the middle of the day, CBS would probably get rid of me. I don't. It seems to be something Clark can get away with pretty regularly.
Yeah, he apparently has a sweet role at that. He, like you said, he's ordering the staff around and he gets to take a nap. He's got a good role there.
Good gig.
Ever since he became Anchorman, Clark doesn't have to do any actual work. He just shows up at. He's the, you know, the Ron Burgundy of the CBS set. He just shows
up. Stay classy, Metropolis.
That's right. He just shows up on set. He's good, right? So,
visually, were you guys as fine that the look of Professor Dr. Tripper is different than the voice you hear on the record? Like on the record, he sounds very young. But Kurt Swan drew like an old guy here, and I always wonder what was the order of getting these things done. Did they do the artwork first, and then they did the record, or did they do it simultaneously? But it doesn't the guy that they cast to play Dr. Tripper doesn't look like the guy in my head, the guy that we see here via the artwork.
I thought the same thing about Perry White's voice. Perry White handed him that award, and it was a very young voice too. And I expected something much more gruff and older.
Hmm. Yeah. I'm the voices on this one. I got to say, I don't quite ring true to my ears the way some of the other Power Records do. Like Superman sounds a little too old and old. He sounds older and a little gruff. And I guess maybe if you're going for a Bud Collier, like from the Filmation cartoon Superman, then it kind of works. But yeah, Jimmy, Perry sounds too young, and the professor and Jimmy almost sound like they're the same actor. And they might not be, but it seems like they might. And one thing that really gets me is on the page where the bullets start coming through the award ceremony, the room, and somebody yells, "Help, Superman!" On the comic, it's a middle-aged man, but it sure sounds like a woman on the record.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm glad you mentioned the Adventures of Superman, the TV show, because when I was listening to this over again, except for the kind of hippy-dippy part where Superman is, give the world back to the world, and then the shot of outer space, this really could have been done as an episode. I mean, it's got a wacky scientist. Other than that shot in outer space, there really wouldn't have been anything budgetary-wise that they couldn't have done. It's a very Earth, no pun intended, Earthbound story for the most part. So, I mean, this really does feel like it could have been an episode of the TV series. And I mean that in a good way. It's very charming and old school like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that old TV, the old TV series. And it's a good foundation for my Superman fandom as well as the movies. And I did have that feeling through this. And Superman did some weird stuff on there sometimes. Like he like vibrated his molecules through solid objects, and you know, he levitated Lois one time in a when they were trapped in a room, I remember. I mean, you know, so I mean, it's, you know, Lester didn't make that stuff up, you know. So yeah, it kind of fits in that way too, I guess. But yeah, that, like you said, the kind of hippy dippy with all the plants, even, you know, the plants respond and the animals, they all sing out, you know, give us back the earth. And but other than that, that's very 70s. But yeah, this could definitely have been an up-budgeted George Reeves episode.
Right. One feature I like about Superman in this record is, of course, he saves the aliens at the end. You know, he decides to help them find a new home, unlike Aquaman in the previous episode where, you know, we have the dehydrator and he's like, oh, my whole planet is going to die. And Aquaman's like, well, too bad. And he just lets them slowly asphyxiate or die of dehydration. Superman's like, I'm at least going to help these aliens find a new world. So good on you, Superman. You were kind of better at your job than Aquaman was in the previous Power Record that we talked about.
And Mira was quite proud of Aquaman for having done that.
She was.
That one. So
she
it was going around that, you know, just that's all right. That's all right. We saved the Earth. That's all that matters. So.
Pretty bloodthirsty. For somebody from Zebel, she's pretty bloodthirsty about alien races. In terms of Power Records, in terms of how much they repurposed this, that's a feature we love to talk about is how much these things were redone. This appeared as a book and record set, which we talked about. It came as a 45 with a comic book attached. And then it was done, it was put on two LPs as well. There was a single LP that had no book attached to it. And then there was another LP that had the Mixes Pitalik story in comic book form. And this was this sort of basically B-side. So they got a good amount of use out of the alien creatures story. The book and record, the book part, which you can see on the website, powerrecord.blogspot.com, features kind of an end paper shot of Superman, Batman, and Robin running, and I am pretty sure that is drawn by Sal Almendola, not Dick Giordano, and they were actually related. I forget exactly how they were, but Sal Almendola did do some merchandising art, and this doesn't quite look like Dick Giordano. I know it's not Neil Adams, so I'm betting it's Sal Almendola drawing the three of them, and it's you didn't see that in a lot of the records. It didn't only show up every so often, but yeah, I mean, Kurt Swan does a good job here. Chris, do you have any idea who you think the inker is? I don't think I can quite figure out the inking style here.
You know, I don't know. The cover looks like it's the same. It's the same pose of Superman. I'm not sure. The S and stuff look like Kurt Swan, but the face is a little more chiseled. So I think that was more heavily inked by somebody. Yeah. That might be like a Rich Buckler or somebody might have inked that. But the insides, I'm kind of wondering if there wasn't some Giordano or Terry Austin or, you know, involved. It's got that somebody from the, you know, one of Giordano's assistants or his proteges looks like maybe. It's got that kind of chiseled inking style that Giordano has. It's that, you know, it looks good. I mean, it's a kind of a different look than you saw on Swan. Now, Frank McLaughlin inked Swan quite a bit around this time, but this looks even a little more Giordano-esque than a lot of his stuff did. So yeah, I'm not sure who it was. It looks good though. It's a good looking comic.
Yeah, I agree. I think you're right on. It's probably Giordano. It makes sense just because of what we know about that a lot of the stuff passed through Continuity Studios' hands. And it also just kind of looks like Dick Giordano to me. I think that's a safe bet. And I don't know about you. I mean, Scott, when you had these as a kid, did you ever get sort of confounded by the fact that, like, on the back cover, it's all Marvel characters?
On this one, I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was always, I mean, maybe it was a good way because I kept thinking, oh, I want all those too.
Yeah.
You know, like I want those ones too. But yeah, that always was, I always thought kind of bizarre. But it's probably, I didn't notice it as much then because superheroes were superheroes to me. I didn't make the delineation. This would have been, well, this came out in 1975. So I probably had it in the 70s. I was probably 4 or 5 years old when it came out and I got it. And I don't think I made that much of a, and that didn't stand out as much at the time. Now it does more, thinking how you would ever pair Marvel superheroes and DC superheroes together now in a merchandising piece. I just don't think that would happen.
No.
Well, I mean, this was the era of Mego when they were advertising them together. I mean, even though they kept them separate on their own packages. But, I mean, Underoos had the characters in the same commercials.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it's just something, you know, like Lego has DC and Marvel sets, but you're not going to see them advertised on each other's boxes. So.
Right. Did you guys, going back to the cover for a second, you know, the cover of this record book is the same as sort of the first splash page when you open up. Mm-hmm. But there was one difference in the two drawings, particularly that disturbed me as a kid. Are you guys looking at it? Can you see it, or do you not have it in front of you?
I can see it. Yeah.
Yeah,
Chris, do you know what I'm talking about? You know what I'm talking about, or the difference there?
Well, I see that the things are actually hitting cars, and it's actually hitting like people in the streets on the splash page. It looked like. Is that what you're talking about? Or?
No. The one for me is on the cover. One of the creatures hits Superman and blows up and is destroyed.
Oh,
and on the interior, that's not there. And as a kid, that always bothered me to think, So these things, basically, when I read and you find out they're alien creatures and they're friendly, as they were, they hit Superman, and there was one of them died right there on the cover.
Oh, you're
that
right.
That always bugged me as a kid. And wow. of course, it's not on the splash page. In the book, they never seem to really hit a person. They're just sort of going into the ground or the buildings or whatever. But as a kid, that always bothered me, that one of those had hit Superman and died.
Wow. I've never noticed that before.
Wow, it's right there on right above his right knee. It's blowing up. Yeah. Wow, that's good eye. Yeah. Well, good eye for young Scott because he apparently saw it.
He was traumatized for 40 plus years, and now he can finally let it out.
The hummingbird alien died.
Now this feels like one of those Marvel records where it got all dark and stuff. It was the 70s. You know? Jeez.
Sorry to bring you down, guys.
Yeah, wow.
Suicidal clowns.
Yeah, right. Suicidal clowns. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a really fun adventure. I think Power Records really knew how to do Superman. I mean, they did them all well to a certain extent, but I think the Superman adventures definitely feel like something from the TV show. And again, I think that's kind of a good thing. They're fun. They're kind of wholesome in their own way. Superman is kind of like always looking out for everybody. And again, I like at the end where he saves the aliens. I think that's a really nice touch. So yeah, it's a really solid record. So we're going to move on to our second feature, which is Batman starring in The Catwoman's Revenge. Scott, do you want to hang around and talk with us about this one too?
I'd love to if you guys would have me.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, all right, everybody. So Joy, Batman in The Catwoman's Revenge.
As Gotham City approaches the witching hour, only the night people are left to roam barely lit streets and rooftops. The idle poor huddled on stoops and benches, and the idle rich reveling in continual celebration. The night-crawling vermin of the underworld, and the avenging angel who is their foe, the Batman.
Across the street, swinging from the peak of the Governor's Plaza building, there's only one person daring enough to do that 500 feet over the city. And I'll bet my cape she's up to no good.
With unerring aim and the uncanny courage of a hero, the Cape Crusader flings his batrope to the top of a lamppost and follows it there. Then to a sixth-floor ledge and a tenth-floor flagpole. Higher, higher, until he is close enough to see...
Catwoman! Swing through that window and the next time you touch ground, it'll be in a cell.
My darling Batman, what a wonderful surprise to find you here. I don't suppose I could interest you in half the take from the cat's eye jewels on display on the 53rd floor.
No chance. You'll need an explosive to blow through the steel-reinforced windows to that floor, and that will take time you don't have anymore.
You have such a way with logic, dear Batman, so you realize, of course, that I have every opportunity to escape through the window of another floor.
I stalled almost long enough to grab her. But now that she's made a move, I've got to stay close.
Through the broken window and down unlit corridors of the skyscraper, Gotham's guardian follows the barely audible footsteps of the Catwoman. Until another sound drowns the padding of his quarry.
I nearly forgot about that cocktail party. It's a benefit affair for solar energy research, and Bruce Wayne declined an invitation. Let's see, stairway doors are locked. No elevator is moved. No broken windows. Catwoman must be crashing the party in her civilian identity. And she knows it would be dangerous for me to arrest her among bystanders. And I'll have to smoke her out.
Seconds later, an unexpected distinguished guest joins the celebration.
Sir, may I please see your in?
Don't be a boor, Albert, and let the gentleman in. It's an honor to have Bruce Wayne with our cause. I was so afraid you wouldn't come.
I was in the area and thought I'd swing by. Tell me, Mrs. Havisham, who's that young lady over there?
You certainly aren't one to waste time, just like your late father, before he met your mother, of course. She's some starlet or ambassador's daughter, some such, young and beautiful, and claws always ready to hook on to a wealthy bachelor. Good luck, Bruce.
That's Selina Kyle, the Catwoman without her costume. I know her, but she doesn't know me.
So then Daddy told the Prime Minister, Winston, if you insist on drawing to a full house, you know...
You look awfully familiar, miss. Have you been to Tahiti in the past year or so?
No, not Tahiti. Maybe Curacao or St. Thomas.
No matter. You see, there was a girl in Tahiti with eyes as remarkable as yours. And I thought there was only one set of eyes like that on the planet, maybe the universe. I was wrong. My name is...
Bruce Wayne. You're one of the pillars of society in Gotham. Surely I can be expected to know you. You can call me Venus for the moment.
Yes, Venus. Maybe if we went somewhere quieter, you'd decide you like me enough to tell me your real name. Ow! What was that?
Did you stick your finger on my ring? There's a little pinpoint in the setting here, but you don't mind that, do you?
No. No. Don't mind.
And now you'll come with me, won't you, Brucie?
Come with you. Whatever you say.
Of course you will, because the ring held an ounce of a hypnotic fluid, like catnip, and now it's been injected into your bloodstream. You'll follow me anywhere now, Brucie.
Whatever you say.
Yes, Bruce Wayne, I've got plans for you.
Later that night, as a pair of guards punched their time clock at Spiffany's jewelry store...
Hey, Freddy, you hear a noise? Like a radiator leak or something?
I don't hear any. Wait a minute. I do hear something. I'm over by the ventilation duct.
Freddy, hey, what's wrong with you? Oh, no. Gas coming from the ventilator. Gotta get out.
Your new costume is just like mine, Brucie. From now on, you'll be called Catman.
Catman.
The guards never saw what hit them. Now let's see how a pillar of society does a tough job. You'll do everything I say.
Everything.
Any pressure on the floor between us and the gem display will cause an alarm to wake the dead. What we've got to do is hook a rope between us and the far wall and climb across to... Bruce? Catman, what are you doing with that rope?
Hook rope between here and far wall.
You lassoed the light fixture like an expert.
Climb across it.
And you're walking it as if you were born into a circus family. Seems I've underestimated you society playboys. Lead on, Catman.
The next day, in the Catwoman's lair...
And this morning at Spiffany's jewelry store, the famed Felicia gem collection was stolen from its burglar-proof case. Authorities believe it to be the work of the Catwoman.
Along with her new associate. For now, you'll be locked in my cage, Bruce, and you'll like it.
Like it? Oh, scrape my hand on the sharp edge of this cage. Pain. I've already been accessory to one crime, and Catwoman's planning another one. But the pain gives me an idea.
By the time I give you the drug to counteract my hypnotic catnip, you'll be up to your whiskers in crime. You'll have no choice but to stay with me.
Haven't been able to fight the drug, but maybe if I keep banging my hand on the sharp edge, the pain will help me beat it.
Let's go, Brucie, into your costume. The Museum of Natural History is waiting for us. This is a real two-cat job, so take this walkie-talkie. Catman, did you hurt that hand?
Hurt hand. Pain.
You'll live. Meanwhile, it'll be your job to turn off the rooftop alarm while I stand watch. Then we'll scramble inside and grab the priceless bone fragments from the oldest saber-toothed tiger ever found. The city will pay a mint in ransom.
Minutes later, at the Great Museum...
That's it, Catman. Up that rope. You climb like you were born in the jungle. Keep in touch, fella.
She told me to climb, so I climb. But the rope is burning my hands. Pain. Snap out of it. If I feel enough pain, I'll beat it.
Catwoman to Catman, I see you've reached the roof. Can you see the alarm mechanism?
Alarm mechanism, yes. Powered by storage battery.
Fine, Catman. Disconnect the battery's cathode the way I showed you and... Catman, what's wrong?
Got hit from behind. It's Batman.
Batman, try to hold him off.
Hold him off. Catwoman, this is the Batman. I don't know who your tough friend is, but the treatment he's getting should go to you.
Catman, I'll be right up to help you. Hold on. Help him nothing. I'm getting out of here.
You're going nowhere, Catwoman. Except to that cell I promised you when we met on top of the Governor's Plaza building.
You win, Batman. But not completely.
Not completely, eh? It looks as though Gotham's finest are alert tonight, too. You won't think me ungentlemanly if I don't escort you downtown myself?
You won't be so smug when you take the mask off, Catman, and see who's been in on my robberies.
Catman, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Catman, the man you caught on the roof of the museum, the one you took that walkie-talkie away from. He's tied on the roof. His name is...
Batman, is this the lady behind the crime wave around town this week?
This young lady is the crime wave, officer. And quite a young lady she is, too.
I was going to frame Wayne, but good. Gotham society would never have recovered. I'll get even with you, Batman.
I doubt it, Catwoman. But I'm looking forward to the next time you try. Booker, officer.
And that was Batman in The Catwoman's Revenge. Chris, what do you think of this one?
This is one of those that's ingrained in my deep in my psyche because this was on the Power Record Batman LP I had as a kid. The one where he and Robin are running on the beach, which was a thing for Neil Adams in the 70s. That sounds weird. I know it's kind of like, but you know, there's that iconic full page splash in Batman 251, the Joker's Five-Way Revenge. There's the slightly different recreation on the cover of that Treasury comic, Rob, which we probably know the number of. And then there's this album cover. And, you know, that's one of my favorite single images of Batman and Robin, and the back sleeve's really cool too. But so I listened to this one, you know, like, along with Robin Meets Man Bat. So, you know, this was very early on in, you know, in painting what a Batman story should be. And I think this one, just like Scott said with the last one, this one feels just like a Bronze Age Batman comic. This feels like a very Denny O'Neill, Neil Adams / Irv Novik Batman story, even though there's no comic for it. So I love it.
Yeah, it's a really fun adventure. I hadn't listened to this one in a while, but I love the intro, man. The intro is right out of like a pulp noir kind of thing where they're setting they're talking about the idle rich, you know, and they're talking about the Denzians, yes, of the night. I mean, this thing is almost like there were a million stories in the Naked City, and here is one of them featuring Batman. So, yeah, I really loved them. But Scott, I want to find out what you thought of this.
I love this story, and kind of like you guys said about the Superman TV show, when I re-listened to this one again today, the first thing I thought of was it could expand it a little, add Robin, Alfred, Gordon, and Chief O'Hara. You have an episode of the 60s Batman TV show, too.
Mm.
I thought about the ring that, you know, the hypnotizing drug, they pricked him with the ring, and I could just see this in the 60s Batman TV show.
Yeah, because she did that on the show. Famously mind controlled Robin with Leslie Gore as Pussycat. So, yeah.
There were several other things. You know, Rob, you talked about that film noir entrance. I love that too. There was even just that hint of the music in the background as they said that intro.
Mm-hmm.
Just totally gave that noir feel to it too. As I was looking through, I wrote a couple notes here that some things that just made me chuckle. When Bruce Wayne first went in to the party, the cocktail party, and the host was Mrs. Havisham.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Miss Havisham, and you guys may know this, was a character in Charles Dickens' Great Expectations.
Mm.
And Miss Havisham was a wealthy spinster in the book who was left at the altar and wore a wedding dress for the rest of her life, but only wore one shoe. And so as he said Miss Havisham, that's what popped into my mind. I'm thinking this cocktail party with this woman, old spinster wearing a wedding dress in this car. And that just made me laugh to myself as I was listening to that.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't catch that.
I'm glad you mentioned Miss Havisham because I love her whole bit about talking about how much Bruce Wayne's father was quite the player. You know,
before he met your mother,
before
of course.
He met your mother, of course. I'm like, wow, okay. Yeah, like, you're like, yeah, Thomas Wayne, like, yeah, he really cut through the women of Gotham like a hot knife through butter, of course, before he met your mother, of course. We're like,
and apparently Mrs. Havisham knows.
Yeah, from experience.
Yeah.
I like that Bruce, you know, unlike a modern story where, you know, we're all used to Batman crashing through the skylight in the middle of a crowded room, he's going to smoke Catwoman out. He's much more subtle. So he goes into Bruce Wayne mode and decides to mingle amongst the guests. I like that. That's an aspect that you don't see a lot anymore, since Batman's more of a, you know, skull breaker nowadays than the subtle detective on, you know, as subtle as you can get in tights and a cape with ears, you know. But the whole setup with, he recognizes Selina Kyle. This might be the first time I ever knew that Catwoman's name was Selina Kyle, because they never called her that on the TV show. And in the movie of the television show, she was Miss Kitka.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's it. So Catwoman had no alias. So this was probably the first time I learned that Selina Kyle was Catwoman's real name. So
I don't know how closely you guys are following along on Cheerscast. But one person who had to have heard this record was Sam Malone, because Bruce Wayne has a speech here where he talks about the color of Selina Kyle's eyes, and he's never seen that color before. That is almost word for word the speech that Sam gives to Diane when he's talking, where she says, no smart woman would fall for your line of BS. And he's like, oh, really? And then later he pulls out this spiel about how Diane's eye color is something he'd only seen once before when he went skiing at dusk. And this speech is almost exactly the same thing. So I'm like,
wow. You know,
some Cheers writer must have had this record and just lifted it. Because I'm like, when I was listening to it, I was like, wait a minute, what? And it is almost exactly the same speech. So, and of course, Bruce Wayne and Sam Malone, both famous players. So, you know, it makes
absolutely
a lot of sense.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Well,
And in this story, too, I had to chuckle. They were going to Spiffani's jewelry store instead of Tiffany's.
Yeah.
Spiffani's it was, yes.
Everybody, everyone remembers that famous movie Breakfast at Spiffani's starring Audrey Hepburn. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The other thing that made me laugh was Bruce Wayne's voice when he was kind of in that cage or in that dungeon, that echoey thing.
Mm-hmm.
He had like a drugged, echoey voice. It sounded just to me like Landru from the Star Trek episode Return of the Archons. If you go listen to that again, I kept thinking that, and I kept seeing Landru in there. It just made me, again, another thing that just made me laugh that I never would have thought of as a kid, but now I hear it, and that's what makes me laugh.
I am of the body. Yeah,
I am of the body.
This is also the second Power record featuring Batman where he gets drugged and has to talk like this, because that happens on the Gorilla City record as well. It's
on the same LP.
So yeah, if you were a kid, you might have been like, God, guys, can you find another plot device to stop drugging Batman, for Pete's sakes? The sleeve art you mentioned, Chris, there is no comic book version of this, unfortunately. It was released as a 45 featuring a drawing by Neil Adams, and it features a scene that doesn't happen because on the cover you've got a guy that looks a lot like Wildcat being sicked on Batman by Catwoman. And of course, nothing like that happens in this story. So again, I don't know whether this was, you know, they gave Neil Adams just kind of a bare bones plot to kind of do a drawing from, or they just didn't care or whatever. But I mean, there's no scene like this in the actual story.
It made me wonder too, the title of the story is Catwoman's Revenge. But what is she ever getting revenge for?
Right.
I mean, there's nothing that she's not, other than, I guess, if they say she's stealing from the rich somehow, I don't know. That's revenge. But there's nothing really alluded to throughout the whole thing that she's targeting. She's doing this crime to get revenge on someone. So I couldn't quite figure that out either.
I mean, the only thing I can think of is if she's getting revenge and she doesn't know it because she's actually using Batman to commit crimes, but she's not aware he's Batman.
Yeah,
so.
Right. And at the end, she does say something. Well, I'll get you, Batman. Well, I don't know. Maybe that was it. I don't know.
Yeah.
They were setting it up for the next one, the sequel.
I do love the whole, you talk about his robotic voice. It's one of those things that, like, the Screech of Man Batten things, just him saying, when he's like, you know, he's faking, it's like, it's Batman. And then he says, she's like, hold him off. And he's like, hold him off. I can just hear that in my brain. Just like, you know, this is one of those, And then he cuts back to Batman as himself talking to her. So it's, yeah.
There's sounds of the fight going on. So is he like punching himself in the face? And
it's Fight Club, you know, 20 years early.
I love Batman's final line, which is right out of like every Bob Haney Batman comic. Booker, officer. This is totally the 70s Batman TV show that we never got, you know, right after Kojak, but before Columbo or something, where he's just straight up a cop, basically. I love that final line. And then speaking of the very end, isn't it weird that this thing ends with like their version of the Batman theme?
Theme. Yeah.
Where did this did that come from? I'd never heard that before in another Power record.
I don't know. They had some extra. They ran short and they shoved it in there.
I was reading somewhere on there, and they talked about where it's on. Like you and you had mentioned. I don't remember if you had mentioned that yet. Where it's on two different LPs, but on one of them it is. It's along with. And you had said this. It was on with the Gorilla City episode. But supposedly on that one, that record also has two versions of the Batman's theme. It says the Batman's theme, and then the Batman's theme reprise at the end. And I'm like. What?
Yeah, it's the same one, but like this is the one at the end of this is just shorter. The longer one is like there's a part where there's this female singer that goes through all these. it's pretty wild. It's pretty trippy for a Batman theme. I mean, it's definitely the 70s. It's almost like the 70s blaxploitation Batman theme. It's pretty wild. I know that, you know, as a kid trying to like, you know, make peace with like the different versions of Batman I'm getting, you know, I'm watching Adam West in every afternoon on the Super Friends. He acts like Adam West, but he's got longer ears. In the comic books, he's, you know, I mean, he's not anything like the Batman we have now, but he is the grim Avenger of the night, and Robin's older. So to me, these Power records were like that later season of Batman after it got into the 70s and they updated it and it had more of an edge. It was more street, you know, a little more soul. You know, it worked with the comics of the time. That's what my young brain told myself, that this is what's going on with this Batman. That's why that theme worked for this Bronze Age version of Batman and Robin. So that's what little Chris Franklin thought anyway.
Little Chris Franklin has a lot more in-depth thought than little Scott X had, I'll tell you that.
But you saw that alien dying in it.
Yeah, Scott, you weren't doing too bad. Yeah, come on. Yeah. I feel so left out now. The one little detail that I will mention about the sleeve, just in terms of piece of trivia, on the LP that features the four stories, on the back, and Chris, you mentioned this, it's got a nice little portrait of Batman and Robin. It features the only Power record to show the Batmobile. This is the only shot we get of Neil Adams showing the Batmobile on a Power record, and it's the 70s sedan version, which is kind of like a hybrid of the one that looked like a regular car, but also has some detail from the TV show, where it's got the fins and the bubble and stuff like that, and it's them streaking across the road, and it looks really cool. I mean, I guess since Neil Adams liked drawing Batman on the beach so much, he didn't have a chance to drive a whole lot, but here we do get to see it there, and I like it. It's good. I mean, these sleeves are, we've talked about this on practically every episode, but there really does need to be some sort of coffee table book of the Power records, of a whole history of these things, interviews. On my website, I was lucky enough to interview somebody who actually worked at Power Records as kind of in the factory, and they didn't remember a whole lot because obviously their perspective of it is very different from the creative end of it. But man, these people are out there, and I would love to know more about these adventures, how they were crafted, how the work was done. I mean, that stuff is just it's a story crying to be told. Maybe someday we'll get that book. But in the meantime, we have the Power Records podcast. We've been enjoying doing these records. So I guess that's going to do it for this Superman Batman edition of the Power Records podcast. Before we get to the listener feedback, we have to thank Scott. Thank you so much for coming on, man. It's always a joy talking to you, and we love having a guest on Power Records.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. I love it. Power Records, like I said, Power Records and Video Comics were my first real entrance into the voices of the characters, literally hearing them. So I really appreciate you guys having me on. I'm humbled and privileged to be here with you two Power Records experts.
between your between your video comics and your Kurt Swan adulation, you're really speaking our language here, both of us.
Yes,
really.
Exactly.
Well, good.
Yeah.
I'm glad. I'm glad I have a safe home here on the Power Records podcast. All
anytime. Right. Yes.
Absolutely. So, all right. Why don't we just jump right to our listener feedback, which was for the previous episode, episode 19, which was the Aquaman Shazam records. So, Chris, do you want to start off?
Yeah, sure. Gothos Mansion wrote in and said, I had no idea there was a Shazam Power record. What is the copyright date on this record? I thought You Bet Your Bippy went out of vogue in the late 60s and was pretty shocked to hear Shazam say it. At least he didn't tell Savannah to sock it to him. Probably most of the kids who bought the new bought the record knew Captain Marvel from the TV show, so they didn't know who Savannah was on the cover. That's a, probably a good guess until you got to the later Filmation cartoon. A lot of kids wouldn't even know who Savannah was because obviously, you know, Mentor and Billy weren't running into Dr. Savannah on the on the live action show.
Unfortunately.
Unfortunately, yeah.
He says, he continues on. He says, I had the Aquaman record on the 1970 Justice League album that omitted the Aquaman, Flash, and Wonder Woman songs. At my young age, I didn't even know who Mira was, so this was my introduction to her. Of course, that was during my Girls Have Cootie years, so I probably thought my beautiful queen part was yucky. So-
Yeah, well, you know, that's the things that we didn't notice then. Now we notice that Lois Lane's hot in Alien Creatures. We didn't notice it then. So, you know, these things happen.
Yeah,
so.
you grow up whether you want to or not. By the way, Gothos, you asked what year it's from. The record is copyrighted 1975. So it was right around when the TV show was getting started, and they were, of course, DC was big on marketing Captain Marvel. So, again, it remains a mystery, another Power Records mystery, why there's only one record. Why only one, and why it was never repurposed on any other record. Like, it really does exist as its own weird little 45 that seems to have no connection to any of the other Power Records. Shazam slash Captain Marvel doesn't appear on any of the group art. I mean, it is really like it was just popped out with nobody else noticing. It's very, very strange, but I'm glad it does exist.
Yeah, that's kind of strange. You think that Power Records did weird like shows that you know hadn't even really had a chance to catch on, like the Gemini Man, but they didn't do a Shazam, which by that point was a huge hit. You know, by 70, it came on in 74, I think. So
something like
it
that.
It was a proven show, and you think they would have just like they did with the Hulk and just issued a whole, you know, LP of nothing, like four Shazam stories, you know, like with the same cast and just do, you know, three more stories and get one out there real quick and do the one off, you know, 45 and maybe a comic.
Yeah,
in 45 or something. It's really strange.
Very strange. My pal David is Gutierrez says, fellas, I own the Shazam record. Bought it so cheap at an old liquidation store called Pick and Save. Now a Big Lots. You guys want it? Yours for $1 million. Thank you, David. It's a very, very generous offer.
Brian Washington wrote in and said, thanks for another cool addition. Only wanted to point out one detail. You've often mentioned the label Tilton. It's actually Tifton, as in the city of Georgia. Tifton Records was, in fact, one of the many divisions of Peter Pan Records, which specialized mostly of international music as well as the superhero and cartoon-related materials. Well, thanks for correcting us there, because I guess that's who put the records out in the 60s, like the original Justice League release. Was that Tifton Records?
Yep. I was the one calling it Tilton, so thank you, Brian. I got that wrong. I in my head, it's Tilton, but it's not. That's not correct.
I have been in Tifton, Georgia. It's a nice town.
There we go. So a little verisimilitude here on the Power Records podcast. And then finally, Mike Bridges says, another great episode of the two shows I've never heard. I believe I heard a scream and music in Shazam that is also on the Incredible Hulk LP. I almost guarantee that that's the case. We'll have to listen to both and go back and to see if it is the same, but I believe it is. Yeah, Power Records never missed an opportunity to repurpose something. So I'm sure that whatever scream you heard on a Shazam record, it also appeared on an Incredible Hulk record. I'm sure they had a library of stuff they just popped in. So thanks, everybody, for those comments. Of course, you can leave comments on this episode over on our website, which is Fire and Water Podcast. .com. And then the very last thing I want to mention is we have a new iTunes review. We only occasionally mention iTunes reviews. We don't get a whole lot, but maybe it's because we don't talk about it very much. But we do appreciate iTunes reviews because it does help the show get noticed, and we appreciate the 5-star review. So we got one from Rockford J. He gave us 5 stars, and the title is The Action Comes Alive. This is from January of 2019. So sorry, Rockford, we're just getting to it now. He says, few things tickle my nostalgia bone quite like the Power Records, so I never miss a too infrequent episode of the Power Records podcast with co-host Chris Franklin and Rob Kelly. The hosts have obvious affection for the subject matter, and while their comments are fun and informative, most importantly, they just play the records. Each episode of the show has at least one complete Power Records story, which is why you want to listen. I hope they get through the whole catalog. Recommended. Well, thank you, Rockford. And yes, this show is surprisingly popular. Chris, we were talking about it off air. This show is one of the more popular ones on the network, strangely enough, and we don't do enough of them. So we keep saying we're going to do this. We keep saying we're going to do more and more episodes, and we don't quite get around to it, but we will have to add this more into our schedule because they're really fun to do and people apparently really like them.
Yeah, you know, maybe every like third Superman movie minute, we just do a Power Records episode.
Maybe so. We have a lot of material to get to. We know that every time we'll pull back the curtain a little. Every time Chris and I talk about we're going to do Power Records, Shag is like $6 million man. And we know we haven't quite done it yet, but we will get to it eventually because there's a bunch of those adventures. So thank you so much, Rockford J, for the iTunes review, and thanks everybody for any of you leave iTunes reviews. We will play them. We will read them full on the air. So thank you, everybody. So I guess that's going to do it for this episode of the Power Records podcast. Again, if you want to leave a comment, go to the website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. This show is one of the few shows that doesn't have its own dedicated Twitter feed. So you can just leave. I know, really. I got to get on that. So you can leave comments over on Twitter at FW Podcast. And before we sign off, Scott, thank you once again for joining us. And why don't you tell everybody where they can find you on the internet?
Mostly you can find me on Twitter. My handle is at the mind of Scott X. As I've said before, it is one of the Twitter handles that Rob does not have. So I was managed to grab that one.
Give me time, Scott. Give me
pretty
time.
Quick. Yeah, exactly. And then I've also appear occasionally here on the Fire and Water Network on a host of different shows. And as Chris and I have emailed about, I am trying to fill out my Fire and Water Podcast Network dance card. So I may be appearing on a new show at some point coming up in the near future, and maybe some return visits to some others that I've been on as well.
Absolutely. I guarantee you will be on a MASHcast relatively soon after this episode airs. So good. Thank you so much. It's always fun talking to you. And it was super fun to have a guest on Power Records. It was really exciting. So, Chris, we did it again. We have another Power Records podcast. And we promise everybody it won't be so long until we get to the next one. Can we guarantee that, Chris?
I think we can, yeah, because like I said, we've got a date to always record Superman Movie Minute. We can at least sneak a Power Records in, at least on an occasional episode when we're recording. So
we will have to get on that. Keep us to our word, everybody. So again, thanks everybody for listening. That's going to do it. So until the next episode, drop the needle and turn the page.
Come, Robin, into the Batmobile and home.